Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
All right, as we mentioned at the tail end of last hour, we will continue to monitor the situation out of Florida State. I know Dan talked about this. Two dead at Florida State University, six injured following a mass shooting earlier this afternoon. And the suspect is identified as Phoenix Eichner, 20 years old, poli-sci student at FSU, and the son of a Leon County Sheriff's deputy. And it was her service revolver or gun. Sorry, I keep saying revolver. Her service gun that he used in the shooting, allegedly.
Prior service weapon, not active.
Thank you.
Service weapon.
And apparently, according to the Leon County Sheriff, who spoke at the news conference that we carried a portion of, in Leon County, when you get a new service weapon, you are allowed to purchase your previous one.
Scott and I were talking about this during the break. One of the reporters asked, well, you know, is she going to face any disciplinary action? He's a young adult, right?
Yep.
And I said to Scott during the break, she's not going to have to be fired or suspended. I don't know how you would continue being.
But what did she do wrong?
She didn't do anything wrong. But how do you recover from this? And you know, we're not even going to talk about that because our focus needs to be on the six victims. She did not do anything wrong. I don't know how you would continue in that line of work in light of what has happened.
Now, you have to be 21 years old to purchase a handgun. He was only 20.
So it was clearly unsecured.
He would not have had access to a handgun had she not had one in the home.
You know, we'll see. I just don't think it's even relevant to talk about disciplinary action because, again, I don't think in that line of work where you are in a helping profession, you mentally recover from something like this.
Well, I will say this. We don't know if he was living at home with mom and dad or mom and or dad. Did he have clearly he had access to the home in some capacity. But when I'll tell you this, when my kids moved out, I no longer locked up my guns. Because, the whole point is if somebody gets into the house, I need quick and easy access to the guns. There are no kids in the house anymore. Haven't been for a couple of years. So they are not locked up anymore. Now, they're not just laying out in the open on the floor somewhere. But I know exactly where to go to get it very quickly. We don't know, was he living at home? Did he live in a dorm? Was he in a fraternity? Did he have an apartment? Where did he live?
It's only been a few hours.
Yeah, and to suggest that we have any clue would be a lie and pure speculation. We do know that the two people that were killed today were not students at Florida State. We don't know if they were staff, professors. We have no clue.
We are just so lost. One of the videos that I refuse to watch, but you're going to see it again and again and again if you go online and have to, search and read things in the sewer the way we do for this job, is that someone on that campus had a Starbucks in her left hand and her cell phone in her right hand, and then films casually walking by one of the female victims down on the ground who was still alive.
It's quite the video.
That happened today, Scott.
Oh, my word.
A female victim lying on the ground that looks to be a student, still alive, blood everywhere, and the woman filming just casually strolls by, filming the woman sipping a Starbucks.
And then has the audacity to post that online.
The Starbucks, and people are asking for her to be outed. I don't. Is it illegal to do that? She's clearly completely morally
destitute,
void. And I don't even know what you say about that. It's so disgusting.
Desensitized.
And then later you see a police officer rushing to the aid of the same victim who's on the ground, thank God. And because we know that the two who died were not students, I presume that means she has at least up to this point survived those injuries. But what do you do with somebody like that? And I don't know, Sam, that that's desensitized, because it's one thing to say we are all desensitized because we see violence on television and in the news. It is an entirely different scenario when you are walking past another human being who is a victim of violent crime and you continue sipping on your Starbucks as you film that human being. I don't even know what to say about that.
Didn't ask if the person was okay.
I'm literally explaining the video, sipping a Starbucks, filming it, walks by.
I'm trying.
We are just so far gone. I don't know what else to even say about it, Scott. It's not a topic. What are we going to say about that? It's shocking in a word, but also we overuse the word shocking. That video is shocking to me.
I don't even know what to say, Dana. Great line from the text line. Morally bankrupt. Morally
100%.
Bankrupt. Didn't even ask if that young lady was okay.
You know, if that's a student, I will say she should be kicked out. That it's so vile that she should be removed from any institution of higher learning. And
she may have to remove herself.
Yeah.
Oh, without question, because people are saying, what in God's name are you thinking?
Well, not only to do it, okay, to film, there's actually two tiers here.
Right, right.
There is the, I'm going to film this poor student laying on the ground, clearly injured, while I sip my latte.
Yep.
And then, here's tier two, I'm going to post it online for the world to see.
There could be multiple layers to the thought process here. We don't know yet.
Nope, not sure there's any layers here.
Out of that building, I'm hearing something because they have their phones ready to go to shoot stuff now.
So they can get clicks.
Etc. And she's just like, I wonder what's going on out here, and pans around and may not have even noticed.
Dan, come on.
Because she's focused on the phone and the Starbucks.
She is walking by the victim. I'm telling you, I've watched it. She is walking by the victim, and she pans down.
Yeah, you see the victim.
To this poor girl as she continues walking. And she does sort of pick up the pace like, oh, wait, yeah, maybe I'm in danger here.
But there's no concern for the person on the ground.
Zero concern for the person on the ground.
Yeah, that's morally bankrupt.
And by then, keep in mind, anyone who's, been paying attention for the last 20 years, by then, there are mass text alerts. There are law enforcement on the scene. You heard that officers were there in seconds.
Yeah.
So I don't buy that I, quote, didn't know what was going on.
Telephone number here is 913-586-7798. I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's so absurd.
So absurd. Yeah, that is a good word, Scott. It is so absurd.
913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. So Matt Fleener over at Channel 9 is reporting, and I'm reading from his story here, a subcontractor installing a fiber line in Lexington, Missouri, submitted a routine dig request to Missouri 811. 5 days before an explosion that killed a young boy and badly hurt his sister and father, according to KNBC9. One utility marked it had no conflict in the area. All the other utilities in the area had markings, according to 811 public records. The gas line was even reported in the 811 records as painted and flagged.
One of the headlines I read yesterday, Scott, says, all of the rules seem to have been followed. They called the dig right place. Dig right called the necessary people. Like, all of these things were done. When the line was struck, someone immediately called the gas company. And it was some 3 hours later that house exploded. We have so many questions about this.
It says 811 records do not automatically imply that a job was done correctly, only that it was completed. Let me read the next sentence. But authorities are still investigating how the gas line rupture occurred, why a surrounding neighborhood did not evacuate for 3.5 hours, and then what caused the explosion. Says Missouri One Call System Executive Director Randy Norton, quote, "I would like to ultimately hear what was the fault. Was it an excavator fault? Did they not excavate properly? Were they not following the best practices? Was that a locator issue?"
Read the next sentence.
Norton leads the nonprofit, which serves as the single point of contact for all public underground facilities located in the state.
This is where we want our contractors to call in. It was shocking to me that Mr. Norton leads a nonprofit which serves as the single point of contact for all public underground facilities. How many, I was thinking in the newsroom today, Scott, how many thousands and thousands and thousands of digs are going on just right now? And we have one point of contact for all of that?
Well, what their job is, I know I'm telling you something you already know. Their only job as, you know, Missouri One Call is to take in the call. Hey, I want to plant a tree on my property on Thursday of next week. Okay, we're on it. Or I'm a big builder and we're getting ready to lay the foundation on a new house at such and such an address. And then their responsibility is simply to call all the utilities or to get in touch with all the utilities. I don't know how they communicate.
Hey, they're going to be digging.
And say, hey, here's the address. You need to mark it so that your lines on that property, if you have any, don't get hit.
So listen to this. Norton said a recent broadband push around the United States has led to more risk for underground mistakes. And it's the NTSB that's investigating this. That was also puzzling to me.
And by underground broadband, I'm assuming they mean Google Fiber. That would be my guess.
I assume. Now, I will tell you this. Neighbors today are understandably furious and asking a whole lot of questions, Scott. If you have not seen the photos of this house that once was, I don't understand how the two, the father and the daughter, survived.
Correct.
What you see in the photo is one concrete slab of, I believe, three stairs.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
That's it. The concrete stairs remain. There were nearby homes. The explosion was so powerful, nearby homes were also damaged. They are saying today they did not get any warning, and they are blaming authorities, as in police and fire.
Well, there seems to be an indication in Fleener's story that there was a 3.5-hour time or window of time where people could have been told, hey, we've got a problem, get out. I'm assuming that the company that hit the line knew they hit the line.
Glass blew out from the windows of at least 20 surrounding homes.
Here's a question I have for people who are in this kind of work. How is it that a home, let's just assume, because we don't have the final report in yet.
I said the same thing, Scott. I know you're going to ask.
The house was a gas explosion, okay?
Clearly.
That killed this young boy, injured his father and his sister.
Critically.
This was a gas explosion that literally took this house off its foundation and destroyed it. How does a gas line cut in the yard lead to a home filling with gas?
Let me read this next sentence, and then that's where we need our contractors and other folks to weigh in at 913-586-7798. 5 days after the tragedy, one of the neighbors, Mr. Peckham, was one of numerous people in the neighborhood expressing little more than disgust and disappointment at what they strongly believe to be the city's lax and negligent handling of the gas line break. They point to the fact that, despite the widespread odor of natural gas throughout much of the afternoon, neighbors received no warning.
Mm-hmm.
Some 3 hours passed from the time the subcontractor hit the gas line. Liberty Utilities was on site to fix it, and the explosion that occurred around 7:45. 3 hours. No knocks on doors by police or fire officials, they say. No prior calls or warnings to evacuate. Then there is the laugh. This is how the story starts, Scott. Listen to this. He called up a video taken from the outside security camera of his neighbors around 8:50 p.m. And the story says this. As a child is dead inside, two others are critically injured, The video begins with an off-camera laugh. It is unclear from whom, as police and fire are going door to door for the first time that day, checking on residents. And he says, look, it doesn't look urgent. It is very matter of fact. You hear them laughing and carrying on like this is a joke. Now, I want to ask those of you who work in this industry, and certainly police and fire will tell you, Scott, you know, they see things that most of us never would or could handle seeing. And, you know, sometimes they are caught using humor.
I understand.
In a manner and in a time that it is not appropriate.
Somebody on the text line says the line actually was not in their yard. It was in the street beside them, two houses down.
Let me ask you this. If you had windows open or you had an attic fan that was drawing in the gas.
Outside air.
Would it just take flipping on a light switch to blow? And then if that's the case, to the neighbor's point, with the whole neighborhood smelling of gas, why wasn't the neighborhood evacuated?
Telephone number is 913-586-7798. Seems like everybody in this business is named Bob. We'll start with Bob in Kansas City. Hello, Bob.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Glad to have you. Thank you.
Pretty much, from what I understood about the situation, I've been a locator for almost 10 years, that with the situation, I've kind of heard from word of mouth, from just people that I know, that the line that questioned was hit, it went unknown, it was exposed, and the gas company was notified, late response, and pretty much at that time, with them being a late response, all that gas was leaking into the air to where, as Dana said, all it would take of the light switch. But from what I heard from a little birdie, that it was actually something as simple as somebody lighting a cigarette that caused what is now being a disaster area.
Okay, but Bob, let me ask you this, because do you evacuate every single time there's a gas leak? We have gas leaks all the time all around the city. I'm curious if you know what should the procedure be. Clearly in this case, if lighting a cigarette blew a house off its foundation and damaged 20 nearby homes, that neighborhood should have clearly been evacuated. But I don't think you can evacuate every single time there's a gas leak, do you?
Well, actually, believe it or not, that is the exact protocol that they implemented after the 2013 JJ Barbecue Restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
They actually, as soon as there's a gas leak exposed or even a whiff of it, they call the fire department, EMT, fire marshal, pretty much all hands on deck, and get the troubled area identified, pinched, shut off, and nobody leaves the scene until everything's back to normal, like nothing happened. That is the protocol for this specific type of situation based on the severity and catastrophe of something like this being exposed to the public in the air system.
Well, and Bob, I'm going to tell you right now, the Kansas City Star goes in depth on this. One neighbor who asked that his name not be used said he called the Lexington police. This is going to be Lexington police around 5 p.m., so 2 hours before the explosion, out of concern for safety. I called them, he says. Multiple people called them. I know multiple people were calling saying they smelled gas. Authorities did not speak of any possible danger, only said that a gas line had been hit and was under repair.
913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. Hey, Bob and Belton, hang tight. You're supposed to be next, but I want to grab Carrie real quick in Excelsior Springs, and then Bob will get to you. Carrie, go ahead.
Hi.
What happened, Carrie?
She said that she had been outdoors earlier in the afternoon or later in the afternoon, around 4 o'clock-ish. She said she could smell the gas.
Who is she?
She went inside. She told her husband. He went out the front door. He talked to the people and said there was nothing to worry about.
And this is your sister?
Yes. Yes, my blood-borne sister. It blew off both of the front porch roof and the back porch roof, and their house caught fire from the upstairs and went down. Wow. The fire went into their upstairs and went down.
So did your sister and her husband stay in their home even though they smelled gas
they
outside?
Were in their home.
That's what I'm saying.
They were watching TV.
Huh.
And
it blew the chairs right back against the walls, you know. And then she's looking up. She's handicapped. Her shoes are in the other room, so she moves so slow because she's had a stroke. And Mark went to gather the dogs, which were crazy. Yeah. She didn't have her shoes on. She's trying to find shoes to get out. Some guy comes to the door and says, "Lady, you got to get out." And she looked at him and said, "I'm handicapped." He said, "You got to get out." And he pulled on her bad arm that doesn't work. And he says, she said, "I'm handicapped." And he turned around. I don't even know that he helped her out.
Carrie, is she able to even, they're not able to stay in their house now, are they?
Oh, no, no, no. They're staying with friends up there.
Huh.
But their house, when you look at all the pictures and the scans, theirs is the one that has a roof down over the front porch.
I've seen that, Carrie. I've seen it.
Yeah. I knew when I saw it on TV in the morning that was her house. It was just pathetic. They've only been there for like 6 months.
I'm so sorry. But I'm glad she's okay, though.
Yeah, the dogs and the people are fine.
Good.
She said the one thing in her house that was not damaged, she had a curio cabinet that had curved glass on the front of it. You know, where you look in, she said not, that didn't sustain a crack.
Wasn't
it
touched.
Did not blow at all.
Well, Carrie, thank you for the call. And I'm glad your sister and her husband are okay.
One of the things we're seeing as we get ready to go to Bob here is that, you know, people are going to start pointing fingers who's to blame.
Oh, yeah.
One of the CEOs of the company that is somehow involved in this process is saying that the contractors out there followed every protocol, that the lines were improperly mapped.
Okay, there's one course of blame, and then... why did 3 hours pass and people weren't told to get out of their homes?
That one's a lot harder to answer, isn't it?
Bob in Belton. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Scott and Dana.
Hi.
I can speak for the contractor end. I've done this work for 12 years, and those markings have a 2-foot leeway on correctness. And it's up to the contractor, if it's off, to still find that utility within 2 feet. I can remember that in my years, we had hit three gas lines. One was at 103rd and Quivira, a two-inch high-pressure gas line. And when we hit that, it went...
You could hear it.
First thing we do is, it was a geyser. First thing we were trained to do was call the emergency. Always call emergency when you hit a gas line. The gas will follow its simple path to wherever it can go, which would be in your house. We called 911 and we immediately went to the direct neighborhood and told homeowners to get out. So the contractor sounds like they followed their needs. And as we always did, it sounds like Liberty Gas or the emergency Lexington is at fault because
Bob, who's,
we don't know that. We don't know.
Well, those are cities. So let's talk about that. Who, when you did all of this work for so many years, whose responsibility is it? Because 3 hours passed before the call was made that we've struck a gas line and the explosion. Whose responsibility is that in the interim to say we need to get everybody out of here?
Well, that's a good question because when we hit a 2-inch high pressure gas line, Atmos Energy in Overland Park responded very shortly thereafter, clamped off the problem. The utility the utility company would come immediately and clamp off the problem and eliminate any hazards. Beyond that, it's up to the 911 people and the city that take care of the rest.
But you're saying to me that, as somebody who's worked in this business, I think you said for 12 years, that gas being leaked from a snapped pipe in the street or in a yard, that gas can get into a house with enough volume that it could cause the house to explode.
It can follow the least amount of travel. It can follow the existing house line and get into that house, yes.
Hmm. Bob, thank you for the call, man. Do appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Be well.
And for anyone saying, well, if you smelled it, why didn't they leave? Well, first of all, would I know to leave? No. If I smelled gas, I would probably call somebody. Everyone called. Everyone called. The neighbors are saying, we were calling police saying, it smells bad, like what's going on? And the reply was, well, there's a gas leak. Well, okay, do we? And one of the neighbors, exasperated, said, we had to call them. No one came to us to say get out. And there are several people that were interviewed that said they were inside their homes the whole time, never smelled gas.
Now, Fleener's story indicates that whoever was responsible for cutting the line did alert authorities. Do I read that correctly?
Yes.
And 3.5 hours elapsed, and neighbors were not told. Lexington is not a big town.
No.
It wouldn't have taken long to get the authorities over to that neighborhood and tell people, get out. Now, let's go to Terry in Parkville. Terry, good afternoon. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Well, I've been doing this for 40 years, and it is a law that when you hit a utility, you're supposed to call 811, which is the locating people.
Yep.
They immediately send out a locator so that they can locate in case there's a dig required, and they also alert the authorities. There should have been someone with the gas company there within 10 or 15 minutes when there's a hit. Now, I will explain. 20 to 25 years ago, we had a duplex blown off its foundation in Overland Park, I believe.
Yep.
Where, you remember that?
I do.
I believe it killed one or two of the ladies. And the reason that they were killed is they knew there was gas, but they had all kinds of animals in their place, and they were running back and forth taking them out. And what had happened is someone had snagged their gas line with a directional boring machine, if you know what that is. And back in the day, meters used to be out by the road, and your pipe would run up, and it would go through a hole in your foundation below ground. That's against code now, because gas, like the gentleman before, it follows least path, and it will follow that pipe right into that house.
So, Terry, let me ask you this. Now, it followed that pipe. Why didn't it follow pipes in the other? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why just that house?
Well, because the hit was probably right there.
Okay.
It follows least path of resistance. For instance, I was working for, the people hit one on 87th Street in Lenexa. And it actually humped the road a foot and a half, the asphalt on 87th Street. Oh, wow. And the police department came. They had four fire trucks. They evacuated four city blocks of Lenexa while it's being repaired. And a doctor came up to us and wanted one of his secretaries to go in so she could answer the phone. I wasn't very nice to him, but,
yeah, you don't want to go in, but you'll send her in.
Right. But with this least path nowadays, if you look at your house, and it's a newer one, your gas goes into the house above ground, so that if it does follow that, it stays outside. If the gas company had been notified and it was 3.5 hours later, there's a real problem there.
Yep.
Because, for instance, downtown when that restaurant blew up, the gas company had been there for over an hour, and they should have had people out of that restaurant. That girl should have never been allowed to go back in that building.
You're talking about JJ's on the plaza?
Yeah, JJ's on the plaza.
Yep.
It's so sad, Terry.
It was terribly sad. And the first thing people do is blame the contractors. And I've been in the news several times when I knew exactly what happened, and the news doesn't get it right.
A subcontractor laying fiber optic cable
reported hitting a glass line. 415, it was reported that he hit the gas line.
913-586-7798. Here on Dan and Parks. Terry, thank you for the call. All right, we will wrap up our conversation with Bill in Lee's Summit. News coming up at the top of the hour with Dan Weinbaum. Hello, Bill.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, a long time ago, I was working at a municipality, and we had a guy hit a gas line, and I wasn't there. But I don't know the nature of the pipe, but he was able to kind of like fit it back together because he was thinking, you know, didn't want all that gas in the area. But the gas man showed up on site, and I mean, he apparently gave him a real behind chewing about how you don't do that, because once you break that line, the gas is off. And this is back, you know, in the late 90s or mid 90s. And he says, you just knocked out everybody's pilot lights. And when you go to connect it again, everybody's gas is flowing. And it could fill everybody's house with gas, and it could be a really bad thing.
So if we've learned one thing today, Bill, for all of our listeners to remember, I was wrong in the very beginning. I said, well, they don't just go evacuating neighborhoods after every gas leak. I was wrong. The answer is yes, you should. And then I think the other thing we've learned, Bill, is that if you smell gas and you know there has been a gas line struck in your neighborhood, if no one tells you to get out, get out.
Oh, yeah. If I smell gas, I don't want to be there.
And if your neighbor says he's getting ready to plant a tree and you said, have you called Dig Right yet? And he says, no, I'm good. You need to evacuate your house as well.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for the time. United Airlines is planning to cut flights starting this summer to match disappointing domestic travel demand, while bookings for pricier international trips do remain strong. So read that. Americans are willing to pay extra to go overseas, but traveling from Kansas City to Atlanta or New York to Chicago, demand for those flights is plummeting.
Do you know who's not traveling right now? Anyone who got their car stolen from unscrupulous tow operators that are now charged in a second county. Boom. We will be talking to Platte County Prosecutor Eric Zahn straight ahead. They are asking if you have been a victim of Metro Tow, please come forward. Victimized not only because you had your car stolen and towed or held hostage, but if you bought a car from these people because they were selling them, if you bought a car and you're now stuck with a car that you cannot title.
That may have been the most brilliant segue I've ever heard in radio.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway.
I was going to say, now what are we going to do for the next minute?
Well, I don't know. There goes my
I'm texting with him back and forth now, Sam. And he said, you got to be looking for more victims. He said, yes. I said, how many do you think there are? Reply, lots. You know, one of the questions I am going to ask, I'm going to be honest here. If you looked at the Google reviews on these people, it's hundreds of pages of awful stories and one star. And not just like the lady was rude. Like they took my car. You know what I mean?
Nobody was calling them.
On and on and on and on.
They were giving themselves the jobs allegedly.
I know, but like.
It's not like you got home and you said, I need a tow. I'm going to call Metro Tow.
I'm so thankful that authorities have finally filed charges. But if you think the victims are going to be just like in the last year, you are all sorely mistaken. This is going to go back. I don't even know how many investigators are going to take to go back and figure out where everybody's cars went.
We'll talk about that in just a moment with Platte County Prosecutor Eric
Dude,
Zahn.
Dude, where's my car?
Flying. Jeez. Somebody get her another cup of coffee right now.
They make me so mad.
News coming up in 2 minutes with Dan Weinbaum. Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.